Yeah, I find that difficult to always say that.
Hi, and welcome back to Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Kerriman. With us for the usual weekend review of the news is former federal prosecutor Michael Zeldin and editor-at-large and senior White House correspondent from CQ Roll Call, John T. Bennett. Happy Easter Sunday to everyone as we record this, and I hope you are having a wonderful Easter and chocolate and eggs and everything to you. So as usual on Just Ask the Press, our weekend review, we're going to take a look at the stuff that's gone on this past week. This week, Donald Trump showed a picture of Joe Biden bound and gagged on the back of a pickup truck as it drove down the highway. The Key Bridge collapsed in Baltimore. Donald Trump is facing a gag order that he doesn't want to answer to. He's got a bun reduction and jury selection coming up in one of his felony cases in April. And Donald Trump is also trying to sell you Bibles, perfect for the Easter weekend. Joe Lieberman has died at age 82. He was a former candidate for the vice presidency. And, of course, Joe Biden raised more than $26 million in a fundraiser this past week, while many of the 0.1 percenters in the Republican Party are returning to help Donald Trump. This and a whole lot more, so stick around. We'll be right back.
In this modern age of misinformation and deceit, Just Ask the Questions newsletter cuts through the BS and gets to the truth with Brian's in-depth articles, columns, and exclusive content not released anywhere else. Get the scoop and stay in the know. Sign up for the Just Ask the Question newsletter now at substack.com/JATQ podcast.
Hi, and welcome back to Just Ask the Press. I am your host, Brian Kerriman. With me, as always, is former federal prosecutor Michael Zeldin, an editor-at-large and senior White House correspondent from CQ Roll Call, John T. Bennett. And as we start this week, guys, there's a lot of news. It's been a busy week, and happy Easter to both of you. So or Easter season or Ramadan or just happy, chocolate day. So as we take a look at what's going on in the world, let's start with the latest thing that's got everybody angry at Donald Trump, and that's him presenting a video of a pickup truck with a lot of flags driving down the highway with Joe Biden bound and gagged. John, you've probably taken a look at that as I have. Are you surprised?
Not at all. I hope everyone hears the disappointment in my voice. I don't think you have to, as objective as we all try to be as reporters and covering officials and would-be elected officials again, I think you can also be disappointed. He wants to be, again, the president of the United States and the leader of the free world. And, when I talk about covering the White House, I tell people, no, I don't cover Joe Biden. And I said, no, I don't cover Barack Obama. No, I don't cover Donald Trump. I cover the presidency. And those gentlemen, as I was covering them, and Biden now, happened to occupy the office. So that's what I'm covering. That's what he posted is beneath the office. It's so far beneath the office. What it conjures up is, Brian, you and I, as we say here just about every week, we grew up in the South, and it conjures up lynchings of black men and some black women as well. But that's what it conjures up to me, is dragging someone down the road who's tied to the trailer hitch or the bumper of a pickup truck. And, we've seen it depicted in movies, and, it was jarring. I finally found the video today, and it was jarring to me, and that's what it brought up. And it just shows that, we've said this, Brian, we've said it privately. And I think this is just part of covering Trump. You have to acknowledge and be intellectually honest with yourself before you can be honest with your readers, is there really is no bottom. There is no limit to the lengths he will go to try to transform Joe Biden into something that I don't think Joe Biden is, some kind of evil entity that is so evil and so bad and his presidency is so bad for Americans' lives that we need to tie an 81-year-old man to a pickup truck and drag him down the interstate. And it's beneath the office, and he's probably going to get 78 million votes.
And with that being said, is it illegal, Michael? Is that, you know, is that some, I know this much. You know, I was questioned by the Secret Service one time because I interviewed a guy who said, you know, if Donald Trump were elected, that he should probably die. And I quoted the guy, and Secret Service asked me, was the guy serious or not? Here's a former president, you know, with the current president bound and gagged in the back of a pickup. Does that, I mean, is it illegal? Is it something that can be prosecuted? Should it?
Well, should and could are different words. And I'm not 100% sure that it constitutes actionable threats. You know, you think of threats more as directed to an individual in the same way that the First Amendment protects hate speech unless it's targeted to someone and it says, like, get him sort of stuff. So I'm not sure it would be, you know, wonderful for Trump to be prosecuted for this, and then he would rail against it and raise more money of it. But I do agree that the unseemliness of it is beyond description. How you can be running for the president of the United States and putting up pictures like that. Now, there are a lot of pictures about Trump on the internet, Trump behind bars, Trump, you know, crying, Trump, you know, all these things. But they're not by his presidential opponent on the presidential opponent's social media page. I think that's what makes this different. Not that, look, cartoonists, political cartoonists can have a field day with Biden and Trump in whatever way they want. But as John says, the office of the president or someone who is running for the office of the president should show more dignity. And dignity and Trump are words that are hard to put in a sentence unless you have a word not in between it. So, well, I think we can leave it as, you know, you can conjure up a circumstance whereby it could be actionable threats, but it won't be. So we might as well live in the real world rather than in our desired imagined world. Those who want this to be imagined. I mean, look, this is a guy who, when he was being prosecuted by Alvin Bragg, who is still prosecuting him in the case that'll start this month, had a baseball bat next to him. I mean, the speechlessness with which you can, you know, address these things is you know, you're all looking for words to describe how unsettling it is to see this. But you know, it is what it is. He is who he is. He is not going to change who he is, except perhaps for the worse. And so as we approach November, people have to figure out, you know, what to do about this.
Well, I'm going to toss it in this way. I agree. I think we live in a technological Middle Ages. I think the idea of being at least conscious of the fact that we're all Americans and we all live in the same boat has left the building. The divisiveness in the culture that we have today allows stuff like that to proliferate. And Donald Trump uses, like a mob boss he's been compared to in the past, he never says anything directly. He always says it. He always obfuscates the message. But the bottom line is he doesn't mind people being violent against those who disagree with him. And he hones that to an edge, and he encourages people to embrace their inner demons instead of their inner angels. And at the end of the day, while I don't think this is actionable, I think it is terrible. And I think if that's who you want to elect as president, then, you know, there's Pinochet, there's Hitler, there's Stalin, there's others who embrace the same philosophy, and you might as well just come out and admit it, that it's your way or the highway, and the idea of half a loaf and democracy has flown out the window. With that said, I'm going to move on to the other big news this week was the Key Bridge collapse in Baltimore. I'll unwrap it this way. It was a terrible accident. And at first, there was a viral message on the, that there was on the internet where social media and idiots who didn't know said it was a purposeful thing. Turned out it was an accidental thing. Of course, there are a lot of questions that come up. And one of them, the Republicans have tried to make something and blame Biden's infrastructure bill for this particular problem. And it's actually just the opposite. This is a question I asked of Pete Buttigieg in the briefing room. Were they aware of the inspection of this particular bridge? They said, no bridge could stand up to to this type of weight, and that's true. But this bridge was also engineered 50 years ago, and the state inspection show that it was a bridge that couldn't stand up to that type of thing. There was nothing structurally unsound about the bridge. But it's from another era. And so it shows why there has to be infrastructure rebuilt. And, with barriers, they have lane these days, they build almost like sea guardrails so that you can't go over and hit the base of the bridge. They have tugs that help. But all of that stuff, hell, I couldn't even get Buttigieg to, tell us for sure when they'd open up the port. He said it would be 5 years to, it could be up to, it took 5 years to build the bridge first time. It wouldn't take that long this time. So we ballparked a figure on rebuilding the bridge, but wouldn't tell us when they would even reopen the port, which affects 8,000 jobs directly, 15,000 jobs indirectly, millions of dollars a day, billions of dollars a year, and it has a huge economic impact. And so once again, I find the Biden administration has the right issue and doesn't say the right words to it. They passed the infrastructure bill. This bridge should have been a priority. And he said there wasn't a priority for rebuilding. But we see today why it should be. John, you were present in the briefing room as well. Once again, I think this is a case they allowed the MAGA people to use an incident that should be their talking point and turn it against them.
Yeah, I will give Secretary Buttigieg the benefit of the doubt on your question and his answer about reopening the port. As you were asking it, and I was sitting two rows behind you in the briefing room as you were asking it, I thought they don't know. Like they probably don't know. That's what he's going to say, and that's exactly what he said in so many words. So they don't know because they don't know how long it's going to take to untwist the dolly, the cargo ship, from what used to be the Key Bridge, which is twisted around the hull. Then once they remove that, they don't know what the ship's going to do because some of the containers shifted on impact. They don't know if I don't think it's going to capsize. Some of those might fall in the river. Then they have to unload the containers one by one. Then they have to move the ship. So I don't think they know yet when the port's going to reopen. And that is to your other point, that's a huge deal because, that's thousands and thousands of jobs in Baltimore.
Millions of dollars.
Area. Thousands, yeah. So you could have folks lose their job here because there's nothing to load and unload if the port's closed. They're looking at, the secretary said, they're looking at a facility that has been refurbished, a former steel mill, which is hard to say if you're from the South, but I got around it with the accent there. It's called Sparrow's Point, which is, I think, in a town where the baseball team is the Orioles and the football team is the Ravens, they have something called Sparrow's Point. I just think that's amazing. And it's so Baltimore. It's a lesser space than the port. It can only handle a few cargo ships at a time. But as Secretary Buttigieg said, it's better than nothing. So they're going to look at trying to use that facility to get some of those jobs back and to get the cargo moving. But people probably are going to lose their jobs here. And again, but to your other point, I think you're right. I think there was a moment here to talk about the importance of the infrastructure law, to talk about why it's important, to talk about in a second term, you know, taking another whack at it, while also not appearing to be spiking the football during a crisis that you got it passed and Trump didn't. Oh, by the way, this is one thing the two guys actually agree on is infrastructure. So I think there was a reluctance on their part to talk about it in those terms because they didn't want to be viewed as politicizing a crisis. But that's exactly what the Republicans are accusing them of anyway.
They
should have, to your point, they should have just talked about it in those terms. I will say, as my filibuster continues, that this is going to be a fight on Capitol Hill, believe it or not. The president raised my eyebrows when he said during his remarks the morning after the bridge came down that he wants the federal government to pay the entire bill of clearing it out, cleaning it up, and rebuilding the bridge, and that could be upwards of $2 billion. And we know government estimates it'll probably be $3.5 billion. That's what that means. And he wants the federal government to pay for all of it. And it wasn't very long before, especially House Republicans, started saying, not so fast, Mr. President, maybe not the whole $2 billion. And it wasn't long after that that Chip Roy from Texas, House Republican from Texas, he wants to offset. He says, okay, if the federal, he doesn't want to pay for all of it with federal dollars. So whatever amount ends up, he wants to offset it with other cuts. And that's one of the hardest things in Washington to agree on is what gets cut on the other side. And Rick Scott, former Florida governor, who's now a Republican senator, in a TV interview was asked about what Biden said about the federal government paying to rebuild the bridge. And he changed the subject and just started bashing Biden. So he didn't say yes, right? So this is going to be a fight, especially in the House. And again, this is going to be where does Mike Johnson, the speaker, fall on this? If he uses the suspension maneuver to suspend the rules 2/3, it probably ekes by with all Democrats voting yes and
if
enough.
He's still sitting there after.
Right.
If he's still the speaker.
But if he feels too much pressure from that the loud conservative group that this is it. We can't give this Democrat. And it comes down to politics. They don't seem to care that this bridge and this port is very important. That they just
the
see
economy federal, to Republicans, all, to Democrats, to everybody.
Right. All federal spending, except defense spending, to this group, to especially more and more Republicans, all federal spending is bad. And then when you ask them,
unless it's on DOD,
unless it's defense or unless it's Donald Trump spending the money. And then when you ask them about that, they change the subject and scurry away. This is going to be a fight. I really think this is going to be a fight.
Michael.
Well, it was an accident.
Yes.
They did the best thing they could, which was they mayday'd in that they were on their way to crashing into the bridge because they had no steering. They dropped their anchor to try to slow the ship down, and it hit. Unfortunately, they weren't able to get the people who were repairing potholes on the bridge notified in time to save themselves. They did stop traffic on both sides of the bridge to prevent more cars from being in harm's way. So in respect of that, I think they did a good job. In terms of that bridge, I go over it a fair bit, and it is an old bridge. It's like the old Bay Bridge that people take from Washington to the Chesapeake Bay area. It always made me nervous when I drove over it. Is this thing going to stay above water?
While I'm on it.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Well, I'm not on it. Who cares if it doesn't?
That's right.
It's all about me, Brian.
But it
does point out that the infrastructure bill was an important bill, remains important. Infrastructure remains important. And, you know, it makes no sense to me that people would be against funding infrastructure development from a pure safety standpoint and from a, you know, works project administration sort of standpoint. What is bad about it other than the politics of not wanting to give your political opponent an apparent success story to run on? I just don't get it.
Well, if Donald Trump is reelected, I guarantee you he'll make news by standing out in front of the broken down bridge going, I alone have saved this, you know, and I'm going to push it forward. I think it's
How many weeks of the Trump administration, you guys covered them, how many weeks of the Trump administration were infrastructure week?
200 of them.
Yeah.
And nothing
how many infrastructure bills and cranes followed?
Yeah.
But
Michael,
zero.
The Trump White House came to an actual bill or a proposal, they gave us a hastily constructed one pager before a briefing that came with other sheets of paper with pictures of random like bridges and stuff. Now, the Key Bridge was not one of those, if I remember correctly, but there were typos in the bullet points, and the briefing, as you might imagine, devolved from there.
Yes. And I'll before we go to break, I'll end it this way. I think at the bottom line to all of this is Donald Trump is full of it. Biden passed the infrastructure bill. This was an issue, if explained correctly, would make people understand why you needed an infrastructure bill.
Right.
I don't think you had to make political hay out of it, but just pointing out the facts. The fact is that bridge had been inspected recently. It did not achieve the greatest of inspection. And we Buttigieg should have said that when I asked that question. He should have acknowledged that. He did acknowledge that it wasn't on a priority list for rebuilding. But honestly, that's exactly why you passed the infrastructure bill, was because of aging infrastructure. He was absolutely right. That bridge, there's no way it would stand up to that impact. But if you rebuild the bridge and you structure it correctly, you can help avoid those type of things in the future. And those are the things that it's the nuance. Mm-hmm. You and I sat through a briefing recently with you know, a source of ours who talked about how it's nuance. It's always the nuance. Right. They can come out.
Yes.
And this is a very nuanced issue. And if they would take the extra time to explain the nuance, I think it would go down well or better with the American public. So with okay, go ahead, John.
I want to add one thing about the Secretary Buttigieg briefing. I didn't think it was the greatest look that several times, including under questioning from one Brian J. Karam, that he didn't blame state officials for the thing falling down, but he referred he deflected it back to the state officials. And I just didn't think, you know, 2 days, a day and a half after this happened, that was the best look.
Well, yeah, my point was, I've seen the report. You're telling me you haven't seen the bridge report? Because it's public record.
Right.
So he should have stepped up and said something, and I'll let that one go. Anyway, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, Michael, you're going to unpack Donald Trump's gag order, bond reduction, and jury selection. Oh, boy. Stick around. We'll be right back.
In this modern age of misinformation and deceit, Just Ask the Questions newsletter cuts through the BS and gets to the truth with Brian's in-depth articles, columns, and exclusive content not released anywhere else. Get the scoop and stay in the know. Sign up for the Just Ask the Question newsletter now at substack.com/JATQ podcast.
Hi, we are back. It is Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam, with our weekly review of the news, Just Ask the Press. With me, as always, is former federal prosecutor Michael Zeldin and editor-at-large and chief White House correspondent for CQ Roll Call, John Bennett. And Michael, when we left, we were talking about the Key Bridge collapse, but and Donald Trump picture of Biden. But let's start out. Donald Trump has been issued a gag order. He went after the judge who wasn't in the gag order. He's got a bond. He had a bond reduction in his civil case that's got to be met on Thursday, I believe, and coming up in about 2 weeks, jury selection in his first of many felony, or first of four felony trials. So bring us up to date on Dear Donnie.
Well, so he has been on a rampage against everybody involved in the Alvin Bragg criminal trial that's about to come up. And if you haven't followed it, all you need to do is follow what he did with Judge Erdogan in the civil Letitia James case, because it's the exact same playbook. He's criticizing everybody and their family as being
literally
evil.
The judge and his daughter.
Well, he did that with in Goron's case. Too. He is doing what he does, which is attacking everybody who poses a threat, in his mind at least, poses a threat to him. And so he was attacking the judge's daughter and others connected to this prosecution, and the judge issued a limited gag order, sort of like the Letitia James case, which said, you know, you can go after me. I'm the judge. I get it. And you can go after the prosecutors. That goes with the territory. But leave their families out of this. And don't threaten witnesses, and don't threaten potential jurors, because that's not acceptable. That poisons the whole system, and cut it out. And so he issued that limited order, and Trump, of course, is appealing it, saying it violates his First Amendment rights
to insult people. Anybody he wants.
Yeah, and I mean, he says, look, people can say bad things about me, but I can't reply. And the answer is, you can reply you can have your lawyers speak about the case and what you think are the weaknesses in the case and what you think may be bias that the prosecutors have or the judge has. All that stuff is perfectly fine within the context of this gag order. Just leave the kids out. You know, it's just sort of like, you guys cover the White House. And thought always was, the kids of the first family are sort of off limits. And people were respectful of not attacking Chelsea Clinton or Barron Trump. They just, you know, it's like those kids have a right to have their own life. And even if they're not kids like age 8, but kids like age 28, they didn't ask for this. They were just born into it, and you leave them alone. And Trump just refuses to honor that. So that's where we are. They have a gag order. Trump is appealing it as a violation of his First Amendment rights, and we'll see if
there
anything
be any
changes.
Kind of any retribution, anything that any kind of
He can be held in contempt, Brian. If there's an order that says you can and can't do this, and you violate the can't do this stuff, then you can be fined. You could theoretically be jailed.
Will he be either?
You know, if the order is upheld, if there's clarity on what the order means, and he violates it, I would hope that he would be sanctioned for that. That he would be having to pay a monetary fine for that. He shouldn't be given, you know, any different treatment than anybody else under these circumstances. Yeah, he's running for president, and he has to have some leeway with respect to that. He's got all the leeway he needs to run for president with this gag order in place. There's nothing about this gag order that limits his ability to run for president. If you're saying that you running for the president requires you to attack the daughter of the judge, then I don't understand what it takes to run for president.
Well, color me surprised if he's ever held accountable. But
right. then the second of bond your reduction. Questions is the bond reduction. So Trump had to come up with $500 million in bond money, and he couldn't. He doesn't have enough liquidity to come up with it. And he asked the Court of Appeals to, you know, reduce that amount. And the Court of Appeals did. They reduced it to $175 million. And he has 10 days within which to come up with that bond. I don't know that he's come up with it yet. But you'd think he'd be able to find someone who would underwrite the bond. He says he has $500 million in cash, but I'd be very surprised if he does, and or whether he'd put up his own money for anything. I expect if you go out to lunch with him, you're stuck with the tab.
Well, I'm not going out to lunch with that guy.
So he has to come up with $175 million, and then he can continue to his appeal his case. And I think, actually, that's fair enough. You know, I don't like the notion that monetary bond, that I don't like the idea that monetary bond should somehow limit your access to the courts. I don't like it, especially in the criminal context where poor people are faced with monetary bonds that they can't meet, and so they languish pretrial in jail. It's a terrible system. And so I think it has to be rethought, this whole profit-making bond system of ours, both civil and criminal. So I've got no problem.
So if he does come up with a bond, he posts it, he'll appeal. If he doesn't come up with a bond and doesn't post it, what will happen?
Then they'll start enforcing the act judgment against him.
There you go. And then the final thing, the jury selection?
Jury selection begins in mid-April in the Alvin Bragg case. It's going to be perhaps the most complicated part of the case. There's a legal complication of, did Bragg properly charge what is misdemeanor conduct as a felony, and was he able to properly use a federal election for a New York State violation? Those are legal questions that'll have to be sorted out. The facts are very straightforward. If they ever have a trial just on the facts, it's pretty clear that Trump gave money to Cohen, who gave money to Stormy Daniels, and then was repaid in a way that made it look as if these were legal fees for Cohen, when they in fact were just repayment of the Stormy Daniels hush money. That's pretty straightforward. I think a jury can flat out understand the criminality of that. The hardest part of this case, I think, in some measure, is figuring out how you get a jury that's going to decide the case on the evidence and not on political predisposition. You know, is a requirement in criminal cases that you have a unanimous jury. If you have a non-unanimous jury, then you get what's called a hung jury, meaning there's no verdict and the prosecutors have to do it all over again or quit. And sometimes they do quit if the jury is hung 11-1 against you as the prosecutor. You might decide not to bring that case again. If it's 11-1 in your favor and you've got one holdout, then you most likely will bring the case again. So the question is, how do they sort out in jury selection a group of 12 people plus some alternates who will do what they swear to do, which is follow the law and the facts and render a verdict based on the law and the facts and not any notions of political outcome desirability. That's going to be tricky.
And aren't they using a litmus test for jurors, kind of one of the litmus tests that's being used in the RNC? Do you believe that Trump lost the election?
Yes, but if I want to be on that jury, and I know that's a litmus test question, and I believe that one way or the other, I believe he lost or I believe he won either way, I can just give him any old answer. There's no lie detector. There's no way of proving it. And the likelihood that you'd be somehow prosecuted for lying to the court that you believe Trump lost the election when in fact you were an election denier, good luck with trying to bring a case around that. So, they have to hope that people are honest and that they hope they can weed out the people who say one thing, but everything about their life seems otherwise. You know, if you're, I would think that people's social media history would be relevant to jury selection. People want to see what people have over the last 6 months been saying on Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn or wherever they post their stuff. If you're saying year over year since the election that Trump was screwed because he was a victim of fraud, and then you walk into the jury box and you say, oh, no, I think it was a very fair election. I would think that that would be knowledge that the prosecutors and the defense attorneys would want to know. So that's where we are. Jury selection to start. It should take a couple of weeks, I would think. And then the trial itself, the facts of the trial don't seem, as I said, all that complex. I don't think it should take all that long. The, you know, the prosecutor puts on the bank statements. Michael Cohen, David Pecker, maybe one of the financial officers of the company. I don't know. They dare put on Weisselberg.
But here's my question, Michael. Could it, at the end of the day, can they, to your point about making a misdemeanor a felony, could they find him guilty of the misdemeanor and not the felony?
He hasn't been charged with the misdemeanors because the statute of limitations ran.
Ah, so it's either all or nothing.
Yeah, that's my understanding of it. Yeah.
Yeah. John, speaking of all or nothing, does all of this matter at all or none of it matter to the Trump voters in the world? Whether you have a hung jury or a really well hung jury, that's, I couldn't resist that one. So
that's 11-1 would Michael be a very well hung jury. I see. You saw my snicker.
I did.
I'm 12. What can I say?
Yeah.
I had two things. I was scrolling. Well, number one, let me go back to the bridge. And we talk about Joe Biden and we talk about Donald Trump a lot.
Yeah.
We had a planning meeting at CQ roll call for the political conventions coming up. And our editor in chief, Jason Dick, advised us as we're there and covering these things. One thing that we need to keep an eye on is the future of both parties, because this is probably it for these two gentlemen. And in thinking about that, as our listeners, are watching the cleanup and everything in Baltimore, keep an eye on Maryland Governor Wes Moore. He's young. He's 45. He checks all the boxes. He's a veteran, young family. Business background, keep an eye on him as someone who could be angling for the baton as a potential presidential candidate down the road. He's impressive and, he has a commanding presence, and that's very important. So I just wanted to throw that in. Number two, I was scrolling my, listening to Michael break all that down. I was scrolling my channel guide on my television. And there's a movie on some network I've never heard of called Finding Normal. If anybody finds any normal this year, please let me know. I'd like to buy some. Because none of that was normal that Michael was talking about.
No.
And this guy is leading in many of the swing states. I know there was some polling out recently where President Biden has caught up to Trump or has closed in a little bit in some of these swing states. But it's incredible that that Trump is still, at least as we record here on Easter Sunday, he's still the front runner. You would have to say that he's the leader. He's more likely to be sworn in as we talk right now than Joe Biden. But will it matter to Trump voters? I think it fires them up. I think we've talked about this here before. I think it fires up the Trump voter. I think the question is, It's still, how does all of this affect independent voters in those swing states that will decide the election? And will all of that fire up Democratic voters to go vote, including Arab Americans, Black voters, Latino voters, and very, 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 very progressive folks? All of those blocks that should be in Biden's category are upset with Biden, but for vastly different reasons. And can they go vote for Joe Biden so they're not voting? I'm sorry about the double negative. So they're not voting for Donald Trump, because if they're not voting for Joe Biden, in a way, that's an indirect vote for Donald Trump. So I think that's the question, is if he's convicted, it's going to fire up the base. It's going to fire up a lot of Republicans who aren't, diehard MAGA maniacs. They're gonna fall in line. John Cornyn. Think about guys like that. Tom Emmer, who have been critical of Trump, and they quickly endorsed him when he locked up the mathematical nomination. So, and I think a lot of Republicans will go home, as they say. So I think it comes down to, what does it do for independents? Does it fire up some of those blocks in Biden's 2020 coalition to put aside what they're upset with the president about, so they're not essentially voting for Trump? But we don't see that yet. They're not saying that yet. You saw pro-Palestinian protesters outside a fundraiser that we're going to talk about later for President Biden's reelection campaign, telling folks as they were leaving Radio City Music Hall, enjoy Trump, because we're never going to vote for Joe Biden. So maybe it motivates those kinds of people to squint really hard and look at this thing and think differently, you know, when they get their ballot in the mail or they show up to vote.
Speaking of all that, one of the things that may fire up the Trump electorate is also, you know, look, he's hawked cologne, tennis shoes, and now Donald Trump is playing Moses Pray and Paper Moon, and is doing the Brian O'Neill gig of selling Bibles. For an extra $5, he'll even autograph it. I think for an extra $5, he'll have the author autograph it. But Donald Trump's out hawking Bibles these days, and that, I have to tell you, with the I don't know that I've ever lived in a time as crazy as this when it comes to politics, and I don't know about any of us have. The guy,
I hope not.
The guy running for, you know, the titular lead guy in the Republican Party, and let's just face it, it's not a Republican Party anymore. They just ought to change the name to MAGA. It's the MAGA Party, right, and get it over with, because there's no one outside of Trump in that party. Trump is the party. Trump is all of that party. So it's not a Republican Party. The Republicans left. It's just MAGA. So in the MAGA Party, you've got a guy who's showing a picture of his opponent bound and gagged. He's got a gag order in a case. He's got a bond reduction in another case, jury selection in another, facing four felonies, 88 felony charges in four different jurisdictions, and he's out hawking Bibles. And by the way, he was caught screwing around on his wife, which is, I don't know, a biblical no-no, and yet he's out saying with a smirk in a video that the Bible is his favorite book. I don't think he's read it, but I don't know. But nonetheless, he's out selling Bibles and saying we need to get back to the Bible and embracing the evangelicals who believe that, and let's be honest, they don't consider Catholics Christians. They want the Christian Baptist, the Christian, you know, that type of Christian Bible and that kind of government, a Christian government. Michael, I'll hit you up with it first. I was appalled to see him doing it. Did it surprise you? Were you appalled by it? Did you like it? I mean, how do you react to that?
Oh, I love Christian nationalism. How can you not like that? How can you not like selling a Bible with political tracks in it and a country and Western song in it with an American flag on the cover? I mean, it's everything that the founding fathers warned us about. And here's a guy selling it for $59.99 with probably, compared to Joe Biden, zero knowledge of what's inside that book. I mean, there's no question but that Biden is a devout Catholic. And Biden probably has read the damn thing, whereas Trump is just selling it. Remember, famously, he marches across Lafayette Square in the Black Lives Matters movement when they cleared the park in that unconstitutional way. And he walks in front of the historic church where presidents have prayed for quite a long time, holding a Bible upside down.
Yes.
You know, that's about his comprehension of Bibles, which is that they're political tools, upside down or not, bound with an American flag and country Western song within it. I don't understand how it isn't some sort of, for a truly devout Christian, how it is not, you know, sacrilege or heresy or something like that. I would think that would be disqualifying for a true Christian if you see somebody doing this, to say that they are sort of politicizing
the Bible,
our faith.
He's the Antichrist that they warned about. Now they're welcoming him in with, John, you and I grew up in the South. You know damn well what this is all about, right?
Well, there's an old saying in the South, and our listeners can look it up, about a used Bible salesman. And that's I said that to you. We were at the White House earlier this week, and it just reminds me, I never trust a used Bible salesman, or as trustworthy as a used Bible salesman. Who signs the Bible?
Right.
I just kept asking that this week. Like, who signs the Bible? I mean, if you're a celebrity and you know, you're somewhere and that's all that someone has, like they have their Bible and you have a Sharpie, you're probably not going to autograph the Bible. You're going to be like, you know, ma'am, maybe I just give me a napkin or something. Let me jot this signature. But it's on brand. It's so on brand. And again, it's amazing that he is the leader in the clubhouse right now to be sworn in on January 20th. And he's selling Bibles. Imagine, I believe in grad school, they called this the counterfactual. Imagine if Joe Biden tomorrow went to his campaign headquarters and there was a lectern, no seal, no presidential seal on it, and he came out with his, you know, Biden reelection ball cap on, and he had a Bible that had, you know, the Joe Biden Foundation or whatever it is logo on the front with an American flag. Can you imagine the response on the right?
Or if he had
or
if he had a video with Trump bound and gagged in the back of a truck.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, that's how I try to think about this a lot of the time, is you try to flip it and imagine if the other guy was doing it. I mean, they would, Fox News, their servers might melt down.
They would melt down, and that'd be biblical if it did. we're going to take it.
Imagine Jesse Waters or Hannity or Laura Ingraham or Harris Faulkner or the show Middays that sometimes I watch because I do try to consume a bit every day, the outnumbered show. Imagine the poor Democrat sitting in the middle of the four Republican ladies just getting roasted if Biden was selling a Bible and not for his reelection. You know, it says apparently there's a disclaimer on this transaction that says it will not be used for campaign expenses. It doesn't say anything about legal expenses, right? Apparently. So he's indirectly telling his supporters, buy this Bible that I may or may not sign and help me in my legal case where I paid off the porn stars.
Yeah.
It's just, you literally cannot make this shit up.
No,
and I've said this before to you, Brian. I probably said it here. If you took all of this in a script to Hollywood, they would laugh you out of town.
Well, or it'd be a great Saturday Night Live skit. But with that, we're going to
blackball you. You'd never work again if you turned in some of this stuff, except on a show like SNL.
Yeah. And with that said, we're going to take another short break. We'll come back with a few other things, and I'll leave it with this. If you're going to buy a Bible from Donald Trump, please turn to Matthew 7:15. Quote, beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. With that, we'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
In this modern age of misinformation and deceit, Just Ask the Questions newsletter cuts through the BS and gets to the truth with Brian's in-depth articles, columns, and exclusive content not released anywhere else. Get the scoop and stay in the know. Sign up for the Just Ask the Question newsletter now at substack.com/JATQ podcast.
Hi, we're back. It's Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Caremother, weekly review of the news, Just Ask the Press, and with former federal prosecutor Michael Zeldin and editor-at-large and chief White House correspondent for CQ Roll Call, John Bennett, and he was just quoting Austin 3:16, but we'll pass on that quote from the Bible. And we'll move on to, you talk about the Bible and selling the Bible. I figured out the stuff on this. It would take it to pay off his bills, right, is what Trump is going to probably use that Bible money for. He'd have to sell 416,000 of them to match what Joe Biden raised in New York on one night with Bruce Springsteen, Barack Obama, and Bill Clinton. And of course, Donald Trump has said the shit hit the fan in New York and the house has burned down and we're all going to hell because of it. Michael, are we going to hell because Joe Biden had a fundraiser in New York?
With the boss? I don't think so, you know? I don't think so, you know?
All that was missing was Bob. All we needed was Dylan.
Yeah. The fact is that Biden has a fundraising advantage, but if the amount of money you had available to you was a determiner of success, we'd be talking about President Bloomberg. So it's not that money necessarily beats popularity, but it sure helps in advertising, and advertising gets you your message, and messages convince people about the righteousness or not of your campaign. So yeah, all this stuff matters, and I don't think there's anything unseemly about two former Democratic presidents being with the current Democratic president raising money. It's what's missing in this picture? Nothing. It's basic blocking and tackling politics. So I don't see how this is somehow, the work of the devil or out of the ordinary thing. It was just very successful. I mean, that's the Republicans, sort of anger about it. It was damn successful. And they can't do the same, because I don't think George W. Bush or Cheney or any of those guys are going to hold a fundraiser with Donald Trump. And in fact, where is George W. Bush? Why is he not speaking out about the dangers of Donald Trump? He knows that as well as anybody after what Trump did to Jeb in the primary election back in 2000. Why are the Bushes some missing in action? They should be out front and center. So should Dick Cheney after what happened to his daughter politically. These guys.
So should every other Republican who's backed away. And
of course.
Only one I see is Cheney, Liz Cheney, and George Conway, and the rest of the Republican Party missing in action.
Yeah, well, they're all silence is enabling, and I don't understand how a person could say, like Mitch McConnell, could say, "Well, of course I'd vote for Trump because I vote for Republicans." Well, this is not a Republican. This is an authoritarian. He may be running under the Republican Party label, but he doesn't subscribe to any of the traditional Republican tenets of free market and economic and international engagement, the EU and NATO and all of that stuff. He doesn't subscribe to any of that, Trump. And so I don't understand how people can be silent in the face of that simply because they're carrying the label of what was the Republican Party. I think these people are all enablers, and shame on them.
Yeah. Well, John, I'm going to give you the last word on this, but before you do, I'm going to say this, that raising that money, that $26 million, does enable ads, but I'll tell you where I think it makes a big difference, probably the biggest difference in these swing states. And I've spent the last 3 months traveling to several of these swing states and talking with organizers there. Donald Trump has no infrastructure on the ground, no on-the-ground organization that is independent of those who support him in those states. So his entire reelection effort in those swing states basically are those elected officials that support him and the people who support those elected officials. On the other hand, Joe Biden has independently put in place a framework of organization in those swing states that could indeed make the difference. And it's that money that not only buys the ads that he's raised, but also affords and pays for that infrastructure. So that could, well, that's how that money could make a big difference. Traditionally, it does in organizing. And I can tell you that I know this much. I said before we began this conversation, I know of a Trumper who has, he has, she has voted. She's a mother of two. She has voted for Donald Trump. She's always voted the Republican Party. She lives in Virginia. She has always voted straight Republican ticket with one exception. She voted for Danica Rome on the down part of the ticket, on the undercard, for state legislator and now state senator, because Danica talked about Route 28, and she had to ride that road every day, and she figured, I'll give her a shot, and she voted for her. Now she's considering voting for Joe Biden because of the Bible sales and because of the tennis shoes. To her, and she describes herself as a devout Christian, says that those, that the tennis shoes to her were like the golden calf. And so she's not, and then the Bible put her over the edge. So she's not voting for Donald Trump. She may not vote at the top of the ticket at all and just vote straight Republican down ticket. But she's considering Joe Biden because she says she's worn out by Donald Trump. So I know that he's hitting the Biden fundraiser, but I think that fundraising that he's done makes me wonder if there are other people who normally vote the straight Republican ticket and like her are afraid. She wouldn't, doesn't want her name out there because she's afraid of her friends in church who are still Trumpers. She's afraid to, the, you know, she goes, I was raised never to talk about politics and religion, and that's all anybody talks about anymore. And she's lost friends because of it. So she doesn't want people to, she doesn't want to talk about it openly. She's wondering if there are others like that. And I think there may be. And I think that the organization that the Biden administration gains from that fundraiser can assist reaching those people. John, I'll give you the last word on that.
Yeah, I was socializing, believe it or not, it does happen sometimes, with some folks last night.
Reporter socializing, I find that hard to believe. But go ahead.
And, you know, one individual is a Republican, usually votes Republican, and was making the point that from their perspective, you know, Joe Biden is so old, he doesn't know where he is at any given moment. And, you know, I wrote several stories about the fundraiser, the Democratic fundraiser, and I made the point to this individual, well, the president looked pretty with it and sounded very with it while he was raising almost $30 million to use against your guy. So that should worry you. And was met with kind of stunned silence that, and then questioning like, oh, you thought he knew where he was? And I was like, yeah, he was talking about policy. He was going deep on policy with Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. So I think the president was on Thursday night. He felt very comfortable with those two individuals. He's known them, obviously, for a long time. He worked for Barack Obama. This was a huge success. It went off really without a hitch. There were some protesters, pro-Palestinian protesters, and some folks yelling at the presidents about Ukraine and Russia. But, you know, Biden has gotten better with this. He informs the security folks to, you know, escort them out, but let them talk, let them speak. He says they have a point. Yeah, I think the reason that you're right, Brian, the reason that Trump's being so critical of this thing was it was so successful. And they don't have a ground game. And when you talk to Biden campaign folks, or, you know, they do calls with reporters, they really point this out. They bring this up, and they're very confident in their own ground game and their own grassroots organization. And, you know, you said a few minutes ago that Trump is the Republican Party. Well, Trump is the campaign.
Yeah.
What Biden acknowledges in public or speaking to us that, and especially at fundraisers, that he needs help. He needs help from local organizers. He needs local officials, members of Congress, you know, everybody needs to get on board and help me get reelected. Trump, you know, he doesn't think or talk that way. He is the campaign. It's him and his kids. And Laura Trump is, depending on how you read the org chart at the RNC, running the RNC. That's how I read it. And so it's he and his family. This has now come down to that. And it always was, I think, the second, the probably final run for president here, was just going to be him and the family and maybe a handful of other people. But no, you're not. I don't think you're going to have a Trump campaign office open in Gastonia, North Carolina.
No,
in a shopping center, for instance. And you can go in there and get your Trump yard sign. You know, despite it all, he still leads in the polls. You have to throw that in. Despite no organization on the ground, because he's able to get this attention. The guy could sneeze and somebody would write a story or post the video online and throw it up on social media and it would get 4 million views.
There you go. With that said, we've come to the end of the day again, but I want to mention for the Joe Lieberman family, Joe Lieberman passed recently at 82, which tells you what we're looking at in the presidential race with two guys fast approaching 82 years of age. But at the same time, I had interviewed him several times. He was always a gentleman, and my best to his family. And I'm sorry for his passing, but I'll leave this. There is a letter to the editor the letter to us that came. And as we talk about sports so much, we're going to end it on an up note. Who you liking for what's left of the NCAA? Who do you think's going to win? Michael?
Connecticut.
Ooh, Connecticut. John?
Yeah, that same gathering last night, I was talking to a good friend of mine, and as I told him, I call this the UConn Invitational.
Yeah.
It's UConn and everyone else. I just hope we get some, you know, we've got a handful of games left. I'm critical of college basketball. There's too much dribbling. You've got world-class Olympic-caliber athletes at the prime of their athletic lives, and they have to run the coach's system. Once the shot clock, which is too long, still at 30 seconds, gets down to about 13, then they set screens and picks, and this very slow-moving offense because the coach believes in it. But I hope we get some good games, and I'm looking forward as someone who grew up on – they call it Tobacco Road, ACC country, this afternoon. Duke and NC State, they should bring back the Jefferson Pilot Raycom graphics for this thing.
Yeah.
So many Saturday afternoons or Sunday afternoons in my living room, my parents' house with my dad watching ACC hoops. I'm looking forward to a little throwback this afternoon.
Well, as a Kentucky boy, I've always been an ABD man, anybody but Duke. So I would And for those who don't know who Christian Leitner is, that should just look it up. So I like Connecticut as well, but I will just say at the end of the day, ABD, anybody but Duke. With that said, we've come to the end of another wonderful time with Just Ask the Question. I want to thank everybody for being with us. John, where can we catch you? What would you like to plug?
At some point this week, President Biden says he will head up to Baltimore and get a firsthand look at the crash site and the fallen bridge. And when he does, you can follow our coverage at rollcall.com.
And Michael, what's up in the podcast? What's coming up, brother?
Well, I've got two interesting books coming up. One is about forced migrant slave shops in America.
Other than that, the White House and the press corps.
Yeah, interesting story about that. And then I'm hoping next week to speak with Ann Applebaum about her book, The Twilight of Democracy, which is, as the title says, about the threats that our democracy faces by authoritarians. So should be interesting stuff. A lot to learn.
That sounds – I'll tune in for that. The Twilight of Democracy, I think, is darkness for democracy, but what do I know? That's just me. So I'll plug this coming up Monday in Salon is an article about the young Trumper that I interviewed and perhaps hidden support for Joe Biden among Trumpers. And then, as usual, you can find me on Thursdays in Salon. And, of course, always here, Just Ask the Question. And the name of the book is called Free the Press. So read, listen, have fun. This is Just Ask the Press. Thank you for joining us, and we will catch you next time.